guys. It is Saturday, March 7th, 2015. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, broadcasting from the cold but sunny Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today on RBN, whose website is republicbroadcasting.org. Please also visit my website, spingola.com, where you will find some interesting links for today's program. Just visit my website and click on the radio schedule button on the left. Please also visit screeningsandyhook.com for information about my new book, Screening Sandy Hook, Causes and Consequences, that is now available as a paperback, hardback, and as a Kindle. Please also visit SpingolaSpeaks.net, a site that one of our very talented listeners created and maintains. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. Our guest this first hour is Christopher Lane. He is the author of several books, and he's a blogger and a professor. His books include The Age of Doubt, Tracing the Roots of Our Religious Uncertainty, and most recently, Shyness, How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness, which has been translated in Japanese. His website is christopherlane.org. Please visit and review his website, especially the Paxil papers, which is very, very interesting. I'm sure that you will have a lot of information if you will research that website. Welcome. May I call you Christopher?
You may indeed. Thank you so much, Deanna. Great to be on.
Well, thank you so much. I was looking through some of my files and whatnot, and I found a documentary that came out in 2005 called Psychiatry, An Industry of Death. And it had a documentary supplement to it. And it said that between the years 1969 and 2005, just in the United States, $306 billion was paid out for psychiatric services.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
It is. It's a stunning film. I mean, that's a complex film because it's made by Scientologists, and some of their sourcing can be a little bit questionable. But it's absolutely true that the figures are staggering. And so this is a multi-billion dollar industry. The implications for public health are immense, particularly when we think about people getting treatment for conditions where they may not need psychiatric medication, but they're nonetheless being prescribed it, and in very big numbers. So it concerns me greatly, yes.
Indeed. I was looking at Wikipedia this morning, and I posted a link on the website for the many, many disorders, the mental disorders, and it's mind-boggling.
It absolutely is, and I think many people assume that because these are included in the DSM, this is the Bible of Psychiatric Diagnosis, it's short for the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, which gets updated every few years. But if something is listed in there, then you can be certain that it's an existing condition. What happened was that I got access to the archive of papers for the creation of the third edition. And this was the revolutionary one that added roughly 112 new conditions over the course of several years. And I beforehand been under the illusion that they were all going to be very scientifically defined, that there was going to be a good consensus on the fact that they did exist as illnesses. And in fact, there was a lot to dispute that. when I got to see the actual papers, that what had happened behind the scenes, it was really eye-opening, to say the least.
Indeed.
So some of the things that I found were, I focused in this book on it's called China's How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness. I was focusing on the creation of social phobia, as it was known then, and it was subsequently redefined as social anxiety disorder. And, just to give your listeners a sense of how easy it is to be diagnosed with this, some of the conditions included, or the symptoms included, fear of eating alone in a restaurant, concern about hand trembling while you're writing a check, and avoidance of public restrooms.
Actually, if somebody's watching you, it just makes me nervous.
Absolutely. It's incredible. It's incredible. So basically what happened was that there was a well-meaning effort on the part of the psychiatrists at the time who were connected to this task force, being appointed by the American Psychiatric Association, to say, what do we do about the people who are so nervous about engaging with other people that they are, as it were, shut-ins, is a term used in Asia to describe them, the people who do not want to go outside, do not want to leave their homes. What happened in the course of designing this for inclusion in the third edition of this manual was that the list of symptoms just grew longer and longer, and so it became easier and easier to be diagnosed with this, until they had to add a warning to say, folks, do not confuse this with shyness, which is such a widespread trait. That basically 50% of more or less any population will self-identify as shy. And the fact that they were forced to add a warning to the fourth edition signals just how far they went. And at the same time, they did not remove any of those earlier symptoms. So you could still be diagnosed with this condition if you don't like eating alone in a restaurant. And let's face it, who does?
Right.
why would avoidance of a public restroom be listed in a manual of mental disorders? And an incredibly influential document. We have to remember, this is not just in the States that this manual has tremendous authority, but really around the world. And you can imagine how many times per day it's invoked in our school system, in our courts, in the prison system. And so it just any change to the wording of this manual takes on enormous importance for the culture. But it basically explains why there's been an explosion of diagnoses of psychiatric illness in this country, as around the world. It's just much, much more easier to be diagnosed with a disorder when the thresholds for them are lowered and lowered so much that basically anyone could trip over them.
Certainly. And you could, as you mentioned, there's so many attributes that most of us, a lot of us have, characteristics that a lot of us have. If we took one of their little, their summary tests to see if we were, had a mental disorder, we would all qualify to...
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes.
To give you another example, I realized I was looking at the creation of what they called avoidant personality disorder. And much of the discussion about that was based on whether people preferred going to work by car or by public transportation. Never did I find any engagement with the fact that did public transportation actually exist for people? It gives them an option. It didn't even come up in the discussions. I mean, that's how extraordinary it was. And then much of the group that had incredible power in terms of adding those 112 new disorders, they were described as being selected because they were kindred spirits. And so for 5 to 6 years they met without including any other perspective within psychiatry. They were very much focused on a biological angle, which meant that the social and environmental factors that influence mental illness as well as psychoanalytic perspectives were not included. When it finally got too much for people, and that the opposition and the criticism is just so acute, they added a person who subsequently resigned, saying he had an Alice in Wonderland feeling listening to all of the discussions. He just could not believe what was going on. This is the addition that subsequently, when they tweak it, they go back to this as their evidence-based edition. This is the one that supposedly is scientific. But what I found looking at the papers was really a shockingly flimsy rationale for the inclusion of these disorders. A lot of warnings from people writing, saying, what are you doing? This is really dangerous. You should not be setting the bar so low, because there will be all kinds of knock-on effects, including that too many people will be diagnosed with mental illness, and they will be given medication that could have really severe side effects for them that they may not be justified in taking in the first place. So you've got this very strange situation where, and this relates to what you were describing as the Paxil Papers section of my website, christopherlane.org, where I've got documents from GlaxoSmithKline. These were confidential inside documents describing both how they were pushing to get their second billion for Paxil as an antidepressant, and also how they should cope and deal with the FDA, which was expressing concerns about the number of side effects, up to one in five people experiencing really severe side effects from this antidepressant. And so they have a whole strategy there listed. Your listeners can read for themselves about how to manage what they call the discontinuation issue, how to manage this. They basically spin it, put the issue in context, as they say, downplay the severity. At the same time, you've got the FDA adding a black box warning, given the severity of the drug, while the symptoms where it can be prescribed still include fear of eating alone in a restaurant, concern about hand trembling while you're writing a check, and so on. So you've got this incredibly bizarre situation, I think, a really dangerous one, where it's very easy to be diagnosed with this condition, and the treatments for it end up being infinitely worse than the minor levels of anxiety for which these drugs are being prescribed. That makes me really worried, really concerned.
Indeed. And of course, the patients are getting younger and younger, and the side effects are well known. I mean, all medications have side effects, but the SSRIs are extremely dangerous. And like with the black box warning, so many people don't read the inserts in their medication. Yeah. And certainly doctors aren't going to sit and tell you about all of these side effects. And now with direct-to-consumer marketing, it's become an even larger market.
It has indeed, yes, absolutely. Just to focus on that last part of it, I mean, these are such big topics, but the direct-to-consumer advertising of psychiatric medication is allowed only in two first world or advanced economies, that is to say New Zealand and the United States of America. This advertising is not permitted in Europe, for example. And what happened was in 1997, the Clinton administration decided to relax the rules for the FDA. They were being pressured a lot by the drug companies at the time, and their thinking was let the drug companies list all of these side effects, and people will get both sides of the story, and they will be allowed to decide for themselves and the doctors as well. But what happens is that people do not have time or do not make time to read the list of side effects, or assume that they won't be affected personally. The doctors find it very, very difficult to keep up with all of the research that's going on. Much of the research that's published is based on cherry-picked results. So the trials, the clinical trials, where the drugs have really devastating effects, sometimes are never included in publications. They just end up at the back of a filing cabinet. There's a huge disincentive on the person organizing their clinical trial to have it published, because many of the sponsors of their research are the drug companies themselves.
Indeed.
So the person publishing those results wants to put the best possible outcome for the product that they're researching, because in many cases the continuation of funding for their lab depends upon it. So you've got an incredible conflict of interest there. And then all kinds of ways in which negative results get recoded as ambiguous or borderline positive. There've been a number of really authoritative studies on this, including in the New England Journal of Medicine, showing how there's been a sort of systematic distortion of the results of these trials, partly by the non-inclusion of negative ones. And then, as you were saying earlier, the age threshold for the prescribing of these drugs keep getting lowered by pressure from the drug companies and from researchers, and so we see a lowering of, say, bipolar disorder in children from its being formerly an adult condition only to its including young children aged 12 to dropping to 9 and now to 6 and even lower. I mean, there's pressure to advance what they call early intervention, where you're giving powerful antipsychotics to toddlers, to infants, on the premise that if they're exhibiting early signs of these behaviors, that the drug will help diminish those behaviors and then stop them from developing into full-blown conditions later in life. There's absolutely no reliable research that can point to that actually taking place. And yet, this is going on. These young, very young children, in many cases, are being given antipsychotics on the basis that they will prevent an explosion of bipolar behavior later in life. This is very worrisome. And there's been a massive shift from the SSRI antidepressants to antipsychotics, and much of that was in place simply because the antipsychotics were still on patent, so they were major revenue earners for the drug companies in ways that the SSRI stopped being, because there were so many copies of them. They stopped being on patent. They no longer made major revenue for those corporations.
All righty, we are going to.
Dr. Joel Wallach, author of the famous health lecture, Dead Doctors Don't Lie, presents his newest book, Epigenetics. Epigenetics is required reading for the very survival of Americans, and yes, all of humanity. Modern man has bet on the wrong horse to save them from disease and pestilence. The medical system has failed us fearfully. Join the health revolution. Buy Epigenetics today and receive a free membership to purchase all the products that Dr. Joel Wallach formulated at wholesale prices, and receive a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. All this for only $25 plus shipping and handling. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311. Again, that's just $25 plus shipping and handling, and you'll receive the new book, Epigenetics, a free membership, and a free CD of Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Call 888-311-4311. That's 888-311-4311.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I am you years ago, when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life. Really? I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals. Wow, why are you so nice to me? Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Or visit microplantpowder.com. Microplantpowder.com.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest this first hour is Christopher Lane. That's L-A-N-E. He is the author of several books. He is a blogger and a professor. His books include The Age of Doubt, Tracing the Roots of Our Religious Uncertainty, and most recently, Shyness, How Normal Behavior Becomes a Sickness. And that has been translated into Korean, French, Spanish, and Japanese. And I would assume it will be translated in other languages also.
That's right. Actually, Danish and Turkish are on the way. So we're up to six, which is nice.
That's wonderful. All righty. The website is christopherlane.org. Please visit that website and purchase the book. The book is wonderful. I have it as a Kindle edition, and it's wonderful. I especially like the story about your mother being shy. And what provoked you to write the book?
Well, that was one of the issues was just thinking about my mother's generation growing up in the 40s in the UK. This is where I'm from. I've lived and worked in the States half my life. I was thinking about her generation and how they dealt with quirks and foibles and behavior and the way that the culture at the time responded to that. So this was one of the factors. Another is that I'm a teacher in the States. I teach in Evanston, and many of the students that I teach will come to me and say, I've been prescribed this SSRI, I've been given this antipsychotic, I've been told that I have bipolar disorder, I've been told that I have social anxiety disorder, and so on. And they would indicate to me some of the side effects that they were experiencing from the medication, often a great deal of lethargy, lack of motivation, other side effects that troubled them, including what we call emotional blunting. This was a concern, especially as it was happening in greater and greater numbers. People were reporting to me that they were feeling ill from the medications themselves. They were not feeling necessarily better. And at the same time, I was really interested in what they were being diagnosed with. And whether they felt
under what circumstances, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Sure.
But under what circumstances, I mean, what would lead them to a doctor in order to get that diagnosis to begin with? Did they see something on TV that generated this inquiry to go to a doctor to find out what was going on? Or
Many of them said they were influenced by the advertising that they saw literally everywhere. I mean, we know it's on the TV, it's in magazines, it's on the radio. I mean, it's inescapable.
Social media.
So we're talking about basically $12 to $13 million worth of direct to consumer psychiatric advertising per day, every single day. So it's inescapable. But also because they're university students. A high-pressure university, they were feeling pressure. They were feeling tense and anxious about their work performance. And there was a feeling, I think, that some of this medication could assist them. I have to say, many of the diagnoses, perhaps around depression, could well be valid, and not in a situation to judge personally, and nor would I wish to. But I was just struck by the cultural factor here, the shift with a younger generation that was assuming increasingly that the answer to their problems lay with medication, rather than, for instance, in talk therapy or in other ways, simply a litany of other ways of dealing with stress, including exercising. So this really struck me, the way that medication became a kind of default option, and the ease with which psychiatrists in particular would prescribe, based sometimes on really flimsy or limited information. I mean, we've got reports from psychiatrists who've since gone public, writing books like Daniel Carlin's Unhinged, where they report that their waiting room is like a bus station, they say, and some of them are seeing patients on the average of 7 to 8 minutes, during which they obviously do not have time to learn much more than the very, very basic information about, you know, how is that person sleeping, what's happening to their normal diet, are they overeating, what are their levels of anxiety. You do not have time in 7 to 8 minutes to determine that someone has a deep-seated anxiety disorder, let alone make a really precise distinction between anxious depression, for instance, and panic disorder. I mean, there are major differences between them, and that determines exactly the class of medication that the psychiatrist, if they want to, or they want to prescribe, will choose. But you don't have time in that limited amount of time to make such a precise diagnosis. So exactly. these were factors that really concern me.
Christopher, we do have to go to a quick break. We will be right back in 3 minutes.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Recent events have shown just how vulnerable we are to deadly viruses, bacteria, and fungus. These diseases are all caused by infectious pathogens that often get the upper hand on conventional medical treatments. Now more than ever, there's a great need for a product that will help protect us. Look no further. Supernatural Silver can provide immune system support to help fight off these deadly pathogens. Supernatural Silver is a new and vastly improved type of silver solution that's safe and extremely effective against 143 types of bacteria, both forms of viruses, mold, and yeast. Supernatural Silver can be taken orally or used topically and can be used in a nebulizer or vaporizer for inhalation. With over 180 scientific studies by independent universities, hospitals, and research institutions, Supernatural Silver is a powerful weapon against disease. Go to supernaturalsilver.com and use the promo code SILVER2014 for 20% off your entire order. Give you and your loved ones a fighting chance with Supernatural Silver.
Americans are reeling from Obamacare, higher prices, and an epidemic of policy lapses. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com has you covered. World-class medical and surgery at one of Asia's most modern hospitals. 300 doctors, surgeons, and dentists serving 300,000 patients a year. Fractions of U.S. prices. Friends or family forced to go out of pocket? Avoid bankruptcy. Tell them to run. Run like hell. Hit us up now. We'll show you how. AsiaRunLikeHellGuide.com.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
The IRS is a private corporation, not a government agency. Income tax is collected by voluntary compliance. To learn to unvolunteer or discontinue volunteering into the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com and immediately implement Strategy 1. The process must be repeated each and every time. Paper, letter, envelope, presentment, etc. Always and forever. Failure equates to acceptance, subsequent resultant contract, and you pay or go to jail by your own consent and agreement contract. Avoid recontracting. Visit escapeharassment.com and implement Strategy 1 immediately. Bar lawyers and accountants won't help you. Why wait? Get Strategy 1 and immediately implement it to divorce the IRS today and forever. That's escapeharassment.com, Strategy 1, to be free from the IRS. escapeharassment.com.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest this hour is Christopher Lane. His website is christopherlane.org. And you said that you had a lot of students who were complaining about the side effects that they were experiencing. And did the university or did any of these people happen to take some sort of a survey or something that perhaps made them or compelled them to seek help from a professional, a psychiatrist?
Well, the mental health services do not release their figures at my university, and that probably because that information is considered confidential. But we can look at the broader trends across the country in terms of the number of diagnoses made. When I was focusing on the book and the promotion of social anxiety disorder as a condition, what I was finding was that, the data was saying there were 3,000 to 5,000 new treatments of Paxil for social anxiety disorder every single day in the States. So this gives you a sense of the scale. Basically, GlaxoSmithKline, who makes Paxil, paid $92 million 1 year for an advertising campaign that they called Imagine Being Allergic to Other People.
Uh-huh.
And what they did, they pictured a young man staring into a teacup with this text, and they put this text on bus shelters and in magazines. You could see the ads. the ads around the country, there was no mention of Paxil whatsoever in the advertising in the campaign. It was said to be sponsored by a group called Freedom from Fear. But investigative reporters discovered that that was actually a subgroup sponsored by the drug maker behind the scenes. And they were sending people to an 800 number, where the drug was being mentioned as one of several possible, outcomes for that behavior. So what we see, if we could take from that example a broader trend across the country, is really an effort to have people second guess their behaviors, so that if they think they're shy and that's a problem, the campaign says you may have a condition that's more serious. And this is part of a trend that we see right across the board with pharmaceutical advertising. And basically what they're trying to do is elevate the importance of the condition for which they have treatment. So it's kind of dramatizing it by saying, imagine being allergic to people, for instance. They also want to redefine that condition to lower stigmas that seem to be attached to it. And then what they're doing is saying, develop a new condition for what they describe as unmet market need. Whenever you hear psychiatrists say, I'm worried about the underdiagnosis of this condition, not enough people are asking their doctors about it, it's a way of signaling to the drug companies, to the wider population, that they think there is greater severity than in fact exists. You would think that people who are suffering would go and seek help for it, but in fact, what the marketing is trying to do is create that anxiety, have people second guess their behaviors, say, actually, maybe it's not just shyness, maybe it's something more serious. This is a common theme in the advertising that I reproduce in the book and that I researched. And what they're doing is dramatizing the condition so that people seek medical remedies for behaviors that previously were just understood as idiosyncrasies, eccentricities, foibles. Now they become syndromes, they become disorders and medical conditions. And if you look at the history of changes to this diagnostic manual, you can see that right in the third edition, where a lot of renaming occurs. So you would have beforehand conditions like a schizophrenic reaction. That just became, the deleted reaction and just called it schizophrenia or schizophrenic disorder. Depressive reaction, anxious reaction, all of those which seem as if they're situational, they're very much tied to a person's condition at that particular moment. If you turn it into a disorder, you've redefined the entire condition as basically a lifelong one for which that person may need medication for years. So you've elevated that condition and you've made it part of their biology as opposed to a reaction perhaps to a very particular moment of stress like a bereavement or a divorce or a loss of work or something like that. So I'm really troubled by that as well because when you turn them into a lifelong condition, basically you justify a medical treatment that can be starting in childhood and until old age, and that suits the drug companies just fine, but actually doesn't suit the health of the country. It doesn't suit public health, nor does it suit our budget in terms of the vast amount, billions and billions of dollars that has to go on reimbursement for these treatments, for people who may be taking medication far longer than they need, and for conditions that may not warrant medical treatment in the first place.
Certainly, and some of these treatments are actually addictive and difficult to get off of them. And
they
so
are.
It just makes they it are. Makes them a lifelong patient from the time that they're born or diagnosed with something. And the diagnosis itself is not scientific because there's no blood tests, there's nothing chemical to indicate or to suggest that there's something wrong. For instance, if you're diabetic, you're going to have a sugar problem. You can take a blood test and you can determine that something is wrong. Okay. But with psychiatric disorders, they're just depending on the patient to tell them what they're feeling, and then based on those feelings, which may be temporary, the psychiatrist then prescribes something.
Absolutely. Many of them do, yeah. And when you look at some of the definitions we talk about, this is from DSM-3, Emotionally Unstable Personality Disorder. this was something they lobbied for inclusion. Chronic Complaint Disorder, no kidding. You actually have, as part of the official symptoms for passive-aggressive personality disorder, quote, dawdling and procrastination over doing things like the shopping and the laundry. Oppositional disorder was created for those who seem, quote, negativistic, disobedient, and ineffective. And when one of the psychiatrists was asked to define masochism and one of these subgroups for the task force, he said, oh, you know what I mean, a whiny individual, the Jewish mother type. I mean, it's just, and so then they come out with all of this language to say it's highly scientific. But exactly the same, Deanna. I mean, the evaluations are so subjective. The drug companies try to add a discussion of a chemical imbalance, but everybody knows now, this is widely known, that it doesn't make sense scientifically. There's no such thing as a chemically balanced mind, let alone a chemically imbalanced one, to do with serotonin and dopamine. These levels fluctuate by the hour. Neither is the causality between low levels of serotonin or high levels of serotonin and depression. You can have people who feel depressed with high levels and so on, or non-depressed with low levels. It's meaningless. And at the same time, as you were saying, the drugs, depending on the class of medication, some of these drugs are highly dependent. You think of benzodiazepines, you think of Xanax as one of our most popular medications for coping with panic disorder. Xanax has high problems with dependency, and people experience enormous difficulties coming off it. There's a literature on this. There are clinics set up just to deal with benzo withdrawal symptoms because these drugs are so difficult to stop treatment on. People have to taper their dosage very, very carefully over months to try to not experience side effects. And even then, sometimes it's just simply impossible. And you imagine how readily these drugs are still being prescribed. Part of what I have in the book is a little anecdote about panic disorder itself. The CEO of Upjohn Pharmaceuticals got up at the Boston conference where they were discussing it and said, And Upjohn is the maker of Xanax, obviously had a very vested interest in this, and he sponsored the conference. And he said, there are three reasons why I'm here talking to you today. The first is money, the second is money, and the third is money. I mean, he actually said that to them. This is in the record. So this is now one of our most widely prescribed drugs in the U.S., and it has huge dependency problems for patients taking it. So you have to think back to that anecdote. You have to think about what was going on in the conversion of panic as a reaction and panic as a disorder that they tried to make basically a biological condition.
Exactly. And sometimes those drugs do cause biological responses. I have a friend that was on Prozac for probably 6 years, attempted to get off of it, and she developed Bell's palsy almost overnight. And she asked her physician about it, and he said he had no idea why she all of a sudden had Bell's palsy. And when I was doing some research about this, I discovered that can happen to people who are on these kinds of drugs.
Yeah.
And it's just so sad. She never could get totally withdrawn from that drug, and then her family, and oftentimes it's family, when they see that you are struggling, they say, well, it must be the disease, and so they persuade the patient, the person, to go back to the doctor, and the doctor usually increases the drug or adds something. And in her case, they added Abilify, and I'm thinking, my gosh, the problem isn't that you have a disorder. The problem is that you're on these drugs.
Well, this is, I'm so glad you raised this, because this is a very real problem. And the people start experiencing symptoms from the medication itself. Of course, the psychiatrist who's prescribed it, the pediatrician for the child, will often think maybe the dosage just needs to be raised, or maybe you need a second medication or a third to deal with these secondary effects. The person can't sleep, they're taking the stimulant, and they're having problems sleeping. We have to provide them, they think, with something to aid sleep at night, and then they're drowsy in the morning, and so they need a third course of medication to help them wake up. And so it goes on. And as you're saying, it's often a confusion between the psychiatric condition and the medical side effects, and that often the psychiatrist can't tell the difference between them, and this is really, really worrying. So often what's needed is to simply taper the dosage and to go back to square one and see what actually is the residual symptom. What is remaining, and is medication the best course of treatment for it, or could it be dealt with through, perhaps, for instance, cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, or talk therapy, psychotherapeutic treatment, and this is a huge problem right now when these. It's so easy to prescribe these medications, and it's very difficult to tell what is the underlying responsibility in terms of these side effects. Yeah.
Right. Now, your students, when they were talking to you about this situation, the feelings that they were having, the side effects that they were having, what was your recommendation, or did you make any recommendations, or were they able to work things out? Did some students drop out? Give us some examples without names, of course. But
I would consistently recommend counseling for students who were experiencing really profound stress from their work level, from their anxiety about remaining at school, and so on. This is, at the height of the financial crisis, too. A lot of students, understandably, were really worried about whether they could continue with their studies, with the tuition costs, and so on. This is a very, very big problem right across the state. And so I would support their effort to seek help through counseling. Counseling invariably would not recommend medication as the first line of defense, but would think about a range of possible treatments. As I say, they don't pass on the figures, they don't pass on the data, but it's understood that at my university they do not treat medication as the immediate option. But think about a range of possible alternatives, and so I had confidence that recommending counseling would be beneficial for the students, and they wouldn't immediately get into a trap with the side effects from medication. On the other hand, there are a large number of people that I know, including from the blog Side Effects that I write for Psychology Today, who write me, email me directly, listing their treatment, their symptoms, telling me about their experiences. And it's heartbreaking because many of them begin with relatively mild, in the scheme of things, psychiatric scheme of things, relatively mild stress or depression, often from a very specific cause, like a bereavement or job loss. And what they find is that they're then subsequently hamstrung by side effects from the medication itself. And they're not able to explain to their physician, get them to understand that the medication is itself the problem.
Sure. All righty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Recent events have shown just how vulnerable we are to deadly viruses, bacteria, and fungus. These diseases are all caused by infectious pathogens that often get the upper hand on conventional medical treatments. Now more than ever, there's a great need for a product that will help protect us. Look no further. Supernatural Silver can provide immune system support to help fight off these deadly pathogens. Supernatural Silver is a new and vastly improved type of silver solution that's safe and extremely effective against 143 types of bacteria, both forms of viruses, mold, and yeast. Supernatural Silver can be taken orally or used topically and can be used in a nebulizer or vaporizer for inhalation. With over 180 scientific studies by independent universities, hospitals, and research institutions, Supernatural Silver is a powerful weapon against disease. Go to supernaturalsilver.com and use the promo code SILVER2014 for 20% off your entire order. Give you and your loved ones a fighting chance with Supernatural Silver.
With autumn in the air, it's time to think about getting ready for winter. And it's time to save at HerbalHealer.com. You'll find amazing seasonal savings to prepare you for the fight against cold and flu season. Like Oregacillin to promote lung health. 30 capsules, regularly $34.95, now only $25. HHA Olive Leaf, the natural antiviral, normally $16.95, now 60 capsules are just $12. HHA Elderberry Power, a great flu and virus fighter, regularly $16.95, 60 capsules, now $10. Save on all our homeopathic detoxes. Choose from lungs, kidney, liver, brain, libido, or whole body, normally $26.95, now just $20. Visit HerbalHealer.com and click on the Fall Winter Specials button to save on all our natural cold and flu fighting products. Also explore our Herbal Healer Academy correspondence courses that teach you how to handle your health naturally. HerbalHealer.com, healing the world with nature, one person at a time, since 1988.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest this first hour is Christopher Lane. He is the author of Shyness, How Normal Behavior Became a Sickness, which has been translated into several languages and is currently being translated into a few more. His website is christopherlane.org. Please visit that website and you may purchase the book. Via his website and also at Amazon. And the table of contents is very interesting. He talks about the diagnostic battles, how emotions become pathologies. He talks about the direct-to-consumer tactics, now sell the disease, because that's what they do. They sell the disease for which they already have a product in mind for it, correct?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And they, as they say, you can't have a treatment unless you've got the disease, and so on. So there's a desire to, once you have a treatment, to put the condition in the DSM and formalize it as a medical condition.
Right. And the other thing about the DSM, doesn't it give, make it legitimate to file insurance claims and to actually get some sort of a formal diagnostic manual, so that
Absolutely.
It can be in your
a
insurance?
Formal diagnosis? Absolutely, yeah. In order to get reimbursement for psychiatric treatment, you need to have a diagnosis from the DSM given. Mm. And the problem is then that becomes hugely influential in determining how people are defined as unwell, and what kind of treatments they'll be given. Basically, when you continue to add dozens and dozens of new conditions to the DSM, as happens with every addition, now we're talking about internet addiction and binge eating disorder and disruptive mood dysregulation disorder for young children and somatic symptom disorder. These are all new ones that have been added to DSM-5. You get an opportunity to diagnose more people as unwell, which means that there's the chances of them taking psychiatric medication increase enormously, but also that the category of normal itself shrinks, so that it becomes harder and harder to be defined as normal, and easier to be defined as experiencing a psychiatric disorder.
Sure, because we all have characteristics that are in the DSM.
We all do. I mean, if you think of just routine idiosyncrasies, of the forms of behavior that can seem like quirks to us, very, very easily redefined by this manual as signs of mental illness. What happens is then the nation itself looks as if, you know, a vast percentage is experiencing a psychiatric condition, and the drug companies use that data to promote their medication yet further. So it's the only way to deal with it, I think, is to scale back the disorders that are added to the DSM, and that means every time there's a new addition, there's a huge fight to have some of them taken out. Very
Indeed.
Difficult to happen then.
Well, thank you so very much for your work, for being on the program today. I hope that people, thank you. The pleasure is mine. I hope that people will purchase your book and visit your website. It's a great book. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So thank you very much.
Thank you too, Deanna.
All righty. Bye bye. We're at the top of the hour. Stay with me, and we'll be back shortly.